Mr. Blotto in the Allstate Skyline Studio. Thank you for Mike and Paul Bolger, and that's Mark Haig. Thanks for joining us.
Right,
now, can you guys hear me through that?
I can hear you.
Can I interview him that way, Dan? Does that sound okay? Or should I bring him on the mic? While we are doing that, I don't want to let Brooke go away. So talk about Prime My Body while we get Paul over here.
Oh, I'm happy to talk about Prime My Body. It's my favorite subject. So Prime My Body is a company that I have joined. It is a fantastic company that is offering a high quality, the highest quality hemp oil. We've partnered with a formulator, a chemist, biochemist named Dr. Christopher Shade, and he has really mastered the highest ability to absorb the hemp. And one of the things that's kind of cool about cannabis is that, well, not cool, but is cool, is that it's a very big molecule. It's hard to absorb. And so Dr. Shade, through Prime My Body, he has mastered the formulation to get a very, very high absorption because of his formulation. And so he does some nanotechnology and uses liposomal delivery. It's a lot of chemistry, and but it is an excellent product. So Prime My Body is where it's at.
I wanted to put Paul on mic. How you doing, Paul?
Hey, good, man. Good.
Thanks for joining. I wanted you to hear this. I never knew this before. But you have Prime My Body as pet hemp?
We have pet hemp. Yeah, it just got released. It's
Mark,
really,
you know about that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Animal, pet products, hemp and CBD and even THC products for animals. Pet food with CBD in it is very popular, and a lot of people swear by it.
So that means you no longer have to blow smoke into the cat's ears.
Yeah.
I thought that ever works. I don't know if I ever saw that work.
They'll put the catnip business out of catnip will go out of it. So how does it work?
So it's an oil also. You put it on their food, and it has also the same liposomal delivery. So the reason why I brought that up is that, you know, if you're not getting it absorbed, it's passing through your body and out. So if you can, you are what you absorb, not just what you eat. You are what you absorb. So if you can get maximum absorption, you're getting the benefits of the nutrition. And so, you know, any mammal, anybody with a brain or spinal cord, that's where these receptors are. So yeah, pets definitely benefit from this. This is a great natural option for the same similar issues. You know, my dog has separation anxiety. You know, dogs can be sore and uncomfortable, and cats too. They can have, you know, they can have other health ailments, you know, and so this has been a great option for them without putting them on some type of medication. This is something that's going to work at the root cause, not just something that's putting a Band-Aid on a problem.
I think I need to get Prime My Body to get through the show.
How do
people find out about it?
So you can go to my website, B Schwarz, and I'll spell that, B S as in Sam, C H W A R Z dot primemybody.com, and you can find me there. Okay. I also can be found on Instagram at nursebrook1.
Will you have any at the Riverside Library?
I will. I let people sample.
Oh, do you really?
Oh, yeah.
I have to come to that.
Yeah, come on over.
Check that out.
Great.
It's legal.
Yeah. Exactly.
So,
pump, pass. That's what we say.
You will have it there. Okay. So, Paul.
Yeah.
Did you ever think you'd be on WGN talking about weed?
I did not foresee that happening.
It's a new year.
It is. It's a brave new world, I guess.
We're happy to be able to create this opportunity.
Yeah, right. The surreal has arrived. I gave my cat some CBD because it seemed, you know, like its bones were aching or something like that. And I didn't know how much to give it or anything like that. And I went out and ran some errands and came back, and Bob Marley was cranking through my whole house. The cat figured out how to listen to reggae music.
So now it was a cool cat.
It's not just people. Now it's a cool cat, man.
So talk about, I've seen you guys from a distance, maybe at, like Retro on Roscoe or something.
We look best from a distance, yeah, that's for sure.
But talk about the history of the band. I was talking a little bit on the phone this week. I jogged my memory, but I probably saw you, this really goes way back, at the Cardinal Club. I want to talk about the Cardinal Club.
The
Cardinal Club. It was like this Polish rock punk club. I mean, yeah, I don't remember much. I was staying out much later back
then.
That
was late 80s.
Yeah, right.
The late 1880s. It feels like, right? It was a club at Belmont and Laramie, right. And I was singing in the band there, and they're all Polish dudes, like off the boat, great musicians. Yeah. And the owner of the club was a phenomenal sax player, Wally, and he put together a great band, and we would play from 9:30 to 5 in the morning, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It was crazy. It was a really good band. We're doing Pink Floyd, and Zeppelin, and some Euro disco crap too, but. That's where we were knocking around, and the guitar player Bob and I were the only Americans in the band. We said, after 2.5 years, we got to get out of here. So we started Mr. Plato in like 91, late 90. And you know, it was a great departure. I mean, that was just a straight cover. Well, we did some originals, but we wanted to like get out of that thing and try and do something bigger. So that's how Plato started.
Before we get into the Plato, how'd you stumble into the Cardinal Club?
Stumble is the correct word, my friend.
Yeah,
we were actually auditioning drummers. Our drummer was Todd Zuckerman, who's now the drummer in Styx. And he was going off to Berklee School of Music, so we had to get a new drummer. And we were auditioning drummers, and this Polish cat comes in, Andrzej Deluski. Hello, Delu, if you're out there. And he auditioned for us, and we didn't choose him. He said, well, why don't you come by this club and sit in? I'm like, okay. So I went by on a Sunday, and I sang a couple songs, and they hired me. And I'm like, this is great, because I was just out of college, living at home, and joined that band. And then it turns out he wasn't trying to join a band. He was out looking for singers, which was a great technique, you know?
Yeah.
To audition for bands you don't want to join and steal their singer. So that's how I have to get in there. And then when I got there, Bob was the only other American in the band, so I kind of gravitated towards him. We were all good pals, though. But they would have rock stars from Poland coming in,
yeah,
and like doing a residency of 3 weeks, and then we would be the band backing them up. And the people in the audience were just freaked out, because it was like seeing, you know, Eddie Vedder to them.
Yeah, right.
Because back home, these people are huge stars. And here, they were at the Cardinal Club, Belmont Laramie, you know. So it was a much smaller scene. So people were really, you know, it was a big rock star trip for the people that were going there a lot. And, you know, it was fun. It was great fun. We did about 400 shows there in 2.5 years.
That many.
Flew to Warsaw, did a big Marlboro festival out there. I could write you a book about that one. That was a trip. Went to the Berlin Wall. It was coming down right at that time. Got a chunk of the wall. It was a great time. So then we started Plato and, you know, started gigging like crazy. You know, we would go to jam nights and...
Yeah, how'd Plato come together?
Well, we had Bob and I, and Alan, our drummer, is from Poland. So he was over on a tour, and he jumped ship. Classic, like, Olympic story. You know, he jumps, and he goes, I'm staying here under the radar, which was awesome. So we had him in the band, and I needed a bass player, and I couldn't find a bass player to save my soul. And my brother, Mike, was always our lead guitar player in our bands growing up, but he was currently just finished law school, and he was a prosecutor for the state's attorney.
Oh,
and I said, Mike, I need a bass player. He goes, okay, I'll play, you know. So we went and bought a big purple bass. It was mauve, actually. It was the most, like, L.A. hair band rock and roll bass you ever saw. It was hilarious. And I joined the band, and just to fill in. And the band kind of took off right away, and we're like, now what? And so then after, like, a year and a half, it came time to be like, he couldn't do both, because he was, like, you know, combing his hair back to go into court and laying it down to rock and roll and not getting any sleep. And finally, he just quit his law gig and join the band full time.
Okay, we got to take a break, and we're going to come back and get more of the history here. So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on WGN.
Good books, the good books. I've seen 10 years, I've never seen 10 more. Beggar made to sleep at my door. Say you're a poor man, and I just want more. I just want more. Temperatures fall. I don't work if it's raining. I would rather be poor but dry. She can live for gold, you can die for the less. Copper lit upon your eyes, upon your eyes. Put down in the mines, don't it feel like the angels are cold? Down in the mines, I can feel the barometer falling.
Priceless, priceless. Mr. Blotto, Paul, come on over to the mic. I want you to tell us about that song. Mark, you're a Deadhead fan, right?
Yeah.
That speaks to you, right?
Well, like right when Mr. Blotto started, so did my prime partying years.
Yes.
So it was a happy coincidence.
Paul, that was great. And tell me about that song.
I don't work on Sunday. It's sort of our ethos, our creed.
Yeah.
But we end up working on Sunday a lot, you know, in the summertime. But it's just, you know, I think Mark was at the warehouse knocking tunes around. And he was like, sitting with the guy. He goes, I don't work on Sunday. I'm like, what's that? He's like, nothing yet. I'm like, okay. And we wrote the tune, you know, on the spot. And we're like, just about a guy, you know, working in the coal mines kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and never sees the light, and he feels the, you know, the temperature drop and this and that. He'd rather be poor but dry, you know. So that's not, you know, it's not worth the risk in the end. And so, you do have to have your day of rest. You have to have your day of leisure, as John Lennon says.
That was really good. I mean, that's a song that took you someplace.
Yeah, right. You know what I mean? We like that in songs. You know?
What year? When did you write that? Roughly. Because this leads to another question.
I would say
maybe
2001-ish.
Well, I want you to come on the mic in the second half. We also want to take calls in a little bit, too. You want to take calls from listeners?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But the reason I asked that question was talk about who John Barlow was and when you worked with him.
Yeah, well, John Barlow, if you don't know, is the primary lyric writer for Bob Weir in the Grateful Dead. Robert Hunter was the one for Jerry Garcia, and Bob Barlow, Robert... was the one for Bob Weir. And so he came out to see Mark's side project one night, and he was knocked out. Mark said, well, you got to hear my original band. And he came the next night. I think we were playing at Joe's on Weed. And John Barlow comes out. And
Brooke, you ever been to Joe's on Weed? Yeah, really. That's country music. Yeah, all right.
And just so we're clear, it's Weed Street.
Yeah, right.
There's even a lot of places on Weed.
I try not to miss a joke. Yeah.
So he came out, and he was knocked out by the band and the way we approached music, the way we approached sound and stuff like that. And then we got introduced to him, and it came up, you know, would you guys like to work with him? I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I've got so many of his lyrics indelibly in my brain from, you know, doing those Dead tunes earlier. So he flew in a couple weeks later to our warehouse, and we just started, you know, I would like be at the guitar and singing gibberish. And he'd have his laptop, and he'd be like... And he'd spin it around and show me these unbelievable lyrics. And I was like, oh, my God, this is great. So in a couple of days, we knocked out a half a dozen tunes. And then the band, you know, put them together and, you know, while he was away. And then he came back and did a little more. And we ended up calling the album Barlow Shanghai.
Because
we were, like, proud to have Shanghai'd him into working with us. But he's a sweet cat.
He was living, like, Sao Paulo or something at the time.
Mark, yeah.
Yes.
Where was he living?
He was, like, Sao Paulo or something.
He was going down there. It wasn't for... Carnival or anything, but you're right, he was going down to Brazil. The guy lived a charmed life. I mean, he was huge with the internet and freedom of the internet and stuff like that. He was very, very involved in that. He was a cattle rancher out in Wyoming or something.
He was probably trying to avoid the U.S. for a little bit.
Maybe.
But he actually flew from there in Chicago, I believe.
To come and hang with us.
Okay.
Which was really cool.
All right, we got a break for the news. I want to come back in a little bit more band history. You got a little more music for us?
Oh, yeah.
You can do that one puff thing?
Sure.
I want to hear that.
And then we'll play the song.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on WGN.
Started with this fever dream, three velvet witches from our machine, 71 stand with a 351 Cleveland. Kinda begs the question, what could I have been believing? First one I cruise on up says to me, maybe you could have your car back so easily. Just take three breaths of this breeze I bring. Do a morning you with every word I say. After one puff, I'm not for a while. Yeah, two puffs, you might find you lost your smile. Three puffs, you might find going blind, looking for the door. Super high. You close your eyes till you find and time days go by. It's a funny thing watching you go shy. Your blue tattoos and matching shoes, you don't have to try, cause you always fly. Now I find myself cutting my losses, swimming in a sea of manatees and albatrosses. He who burns his bridges will soon be burning crosses. Ask yourself, do you know who the boss is? After one puff, and you're all right for a while.
After two puffs, you might find you lost your style. That free puff, you might find going blind, looking for the door.
Mr. Blotto with one puff. You know, might be the first time, Retro and Roscoe, I think I'd had a few beers or something, but that may be the first time I've heard you guys straight. In the jam band world, are you considered a jam band? Where do the lyrics come in with the jam stuff? You know what I mean? Your lyrics are great.
We're considered the finest jam band on earth, just so you know. If you're looking for
by us, anyway.
By us. The lyrics, I mean, we've always given a lot of weight to the lyrics. We always thought that the lyrics are a great opportunity to tell a story. And as you said, take you somewhere. You can't just, I mean, for us, you can't just do that jam band thing of, I was walking down the street and I saw the bird, the tweed. Like, you know, it's got to be. We care a lot about words. So we're kind of on our own on that. I mean, we give it more weight probably than any of our contemporaries. And I think it shows, you know, because all our songs have some sort of, if not a story, if it's watercolor or pastiche or something like that, at least there's word play that, like, you know, John Lennon was the best, you know, just making words that sounded good together work.
Right.
You know, sometimes I say, what was your song about? He goes, I don't know, man. I was just playing with words, you know.
Yeah, right.
And which is great fun.
Now talk about One Puff, the song the listeners just heard.
That one I had a fever dream, and I woke up hearing that song in my head, and it was like these three chicks, they were hot. They were like Winona Ryder and like Crushed Velvet, like three of them, like pale, and they're in the middle of this forest that I grew up in. I didn't grow up in the forest, but I was raised by a pack of wolves. No, but near it was, you know,
it makes so much sense now, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know how a dream puts you back in that spot? So there was this forest in our house, and there was this clearing, and there I was. And the dream got weirder in that this car that I had, my favorite car I ever had, was a 1971 Ford Mustang Grande. And in this dream, the car is in the clearing in the forest, which is impossible. And Winona and her two witchy friends are creeping up to me, and they're trying to tempt me, saying, you know, holding out the spliff, saying, you know, take some of this wind we're bringing, you know. And like, I'm like resisting. I'm like, no, there's something. And they're like, you can have that car back if you only, you know, take a puff or something like that. And so I was like, and I started listening to the song, and the song that they were singing, it was like sirens, you know, it was like luring me in. But if I listened to the lyrics, the lyrics were warning me not to. You'll be all right for a while. You lost your smile. You'll be going blind looking for the... So that was like a weird thing in the dream. It was like, okay, listen to the lyrics. It's kind of like to your earlier point of the like lyrics being important. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so then I got up, and back in that day, it was a little handheld tape recorder. And I just got the idea down. I'm like, it was very like girly when I came up with it. It was like,
yeah.
And then you run it through the band's filter, like, you know. So everyone puts their thing on it, you know.
We talked. I don't want to bogart the whole interview. So we are going to take calls. If there's any Blotto fans, they can call us with questions at 312-981-7200. Talk about where you did grow up. Where your guys' roots?
You grew up, Mark.
I grew up in River Forest. Adjacent to Oak Park.
Yeah.
Went to Oak Park High School. We had it was a pretty big school. So the neat thing about growing up there was that it was a nice little suburb, yet we're a hop, skip, and a jump away from the city.
Yeah.
So when I was in seventh grade, I started exploring in the city with my friends, jumping on the L.
Yeah.
And finding different record stores and buying every album I could find.
Yeah.
Back in those days, you'd find someone like Jeff Beck on an album who was with Rod Stewart.
Yeah.
And then you would find another record, Jeff Beck, with a bunch of musicians you never heard of. Tim Bogart covered a piece. And then you find bands that they're in. So it was just this really cool experience.
Down a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Did you go to Valhalla?
Was that Valhalla? Of course. One of my favorite record stores. Yeah. Val was great, too. She would always help you and make suggestions and things like that.
Yeah. Mike and Paul?
Well, we're brothers.
Yeah, right.
So we grew up in Kankakee.
I grew up in a forest with Paul.
With a car. We don't know how the car got out of the woods.
Not River Forest, just forest.
Yeah. Our dad was a car dealer, so we moved a lot. I went to five different grade schools and a couple high schools and stuff. So my earliest memories are Harvard, Illinois, even though we were born in Chicago. Then we moved to Kankakee, and then in like college years, we moved to the west side, Glen Ellen. And then... get out of college and move to the north side.
Yeah.
Lived like a pirate for 10 years.
Yeah. Was there music around the house?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
My dad, did your parents play? My dad played piano and banjo by ear. My mom played piano reading music.
My dad played banjo.
Oh, really? Really?
My mom played piano as well.
Yeah.
My mom played the piano and sang harmonies a lot. My dad liked music, but when I told him I was going into music, it was like I just told him I was going to audition for a chorus line or something. He was like, are you kidding me? What's your plan in life? So I graduated college, and I went right into music right after that. So,
Did you go to New Orleans recently?
Yeah, we just played for the first time in New Orleans as a band at the Maple Leaf.
Right.
We went down in November or October?
November.
We played Friday and Saturday at the Maple Leaf and recorded a live album down there.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. But that one reason I brought that up is that your dad, did he like the Preservation Hall jazz band?
Yes.
Yeah.
And whenever we were down there with my dad, we would have to go to Preservation Hall, and you sit there on the cement and you listen to this guy. And he was just in hog heaven. He loved the Dukes of Dixieland and all that stuff, you know. And he said, when I die, I want you to spread my ashes in the Preservation Hall.
Really?
So we're going to do that. You know, he passed a couple years ago. I'm like... I kept a lock of his hair, and next time I go down there, I might just be like, throw it in the corner.
Yeah.
Not like
they'll
sweep
the floor, but they won't get it
all. Not that they sweep the Preservation Hall.
We did that with a friend in Scottsdale. We took his ashes, and we were sitting having in a bar in Scottsdale, and they swept them up right while we were there. It was really, really kind of sad.
Yeah. Dad's wishes weren't to be part of a street cleaner rush.
He wanted to get thrown out of a bar one more time. Yeah,
So many questions there. I mean, New Orleans, you'd been to New Orleans before as
lots of times.
A tourist or something.
Oh, yeah.
But what was it like for them, as musicians to go down there and absorb all that? And then the part two of that question is why you've always been so loyal to the Midwest.
Well, the Midwest is where we are. You know, it's like we used to go to Colorado a couple times a year. We have a nice bus. You know, we joke that have bus won't travel. We'll travel if we're motivated. And if we do, we go in style. It's got 12 bunks and it's nice way to travel. But we don't really have to get out of Dodge that badly. We do 150 gigs a year, all within 3 hours a year, because we can.
Mm-hmm.
We change our set list up every night. So if you see us Friday, you don't see one song on Saturday that you heard Friday, and so on and so on and so on. So it keeps it super fresh, and so our crowd keeps going back for multiple shows.
Okay, we're going to take some calls here. You want to take, Dan, you want to take, we normally don't take calls on this show, so you're very right. You're very privileged.
We'll see how we're on uncharted ground.
You may see why in a minute.
They may be collection agencies, I'm not sure. Yeah.
But let's take Jonathan in Forest Park, number one. Jonathan, are you there?
Hey, yeah, guys.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
Hey, I was wondering if you guys were ever to consider hiring a local mandolin player, who would that be?
Jonathan
from Forest Park.
Oh, my God.
You know why?
Why?
He's got a cute little wife.
Yes.
Yeah.
We just heard Forest, and we're really excited about that. It brought me back to my youth.
Run, Forest, run.
What is the full, I mean, you brought, what's the full band now? What's
full band?
Instrumentation-wise?
Yeah, right.
There is Paul on lead acoustic guitar.
Yeah, lead acoustic.
Yeah.
Lead vocals. We all kind of sing, except for the drummer. But it's two guitars, bass, keyboards, and drums.
And the keyboards are a Hammond organ.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah.
Love that.
Remember, we were going to bring that in here tonight. Change our mind. Sure.
And then we're going to do this, and then we're going to do that.
Yeah.
You guys were trying the cannabis thing out early when you're talking about that. Right?
Yeah.
Right. We should do this.
Yeah. Okay, Jonathan, we got the Pierre and Glencoe wants to know about the creative process. Pierre?
Hello. Yes, hello, guys. How are you?
Good.
Hey.
Hey, Paul and Pear, Pear here. I just wanted to know a little bit about you guys. When you create songs, how does that process work? How do you guys work together or separately, or how does it come? Is it the music before the words before the music, or is it all a mash? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, each sort of...
it's Mike there, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
The songs each kind of go their own way. Sometimes Mark will come in with a musical passage. Sometimes Paul will come in with a verse and chorus type of thing. Sometimes I'll come in with lyrics and such like that, and everyone kind of puts their own thing to it. We don't have a set thing. It isn't always one way. Some songs really, they're like children or cats, and they kind of want to go their own direction, and you can't really steer them that much. But we just...
And you can give CBD to cats, by the way, but not to children.
And to children. Children, they won't tell anybody until they're older, and then they don't need
it. Yeah, because it doesn't have that. Yeah. Let me just put my two cents in. Pierre, am I saying that right? Pierre?
Yes, Pierre.
Mostly, it comes in where one of us has an idea, strums it to everyone else, and then they jump on it, and they go, okay, let's do this. And then everyone's, you know, contributing ideas, and we all come to a consensus about it.
How do you avoid getting in each other's way? I mean, there's got to be some creative abrasion there at some time.
We get in each other's way all the time.
You have to declare ahead of time if you're married. We call it married to something. Like, here's the chorus and I'm married to it. Like, or they'll say, well, what do you think of the verse? I'm not married to it. If you can beat it, you know, I'll go along with it. You have to be able to. It was a tough thing. It was a tough thing to learn how to do with each other. But once you see it work a couple times, then you learn and you go, okay, I have to give up and not be so adamant about keeping my thing the way.
Well, it definitely works. You guys are phenomenal, so I appreciate what you guys are doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Pierre.
Thanks.
I want to get another call, but I want to follow up that train of thought. I mean, the art of improvisation, how does that play into songwriting? I mean, you go off in all these other directions. I mean...
Sometimes we catch an idea at soundcheck and we tape it on our phone real quick, you know, like a minute of it, because we landed in some weird territory. But Mark's really like the improviser over things. So it usually comes down to what he wants to improvise over.
Yeah. I always try to leave a section that's going to be open, you know, blank canvas to paint on. And that's the fun for me, as well as everything else.
Yeah.
But, right. We'll be like, you know, do you want to solo over the verse kind of chords, or do you want to like do a whole new section? And then he'll be like, let me think about it, you know.
Everybody also writes in their own way. Like, and I always joke that writing with Mark is like writing with a defective robot, because parts just fall off of him. You know, and so we're like, I got a verse, and Paul's got a chorus, and Mark's going, every time we've done it, he's like, oh, I got something to go with that. I got something, and it's for me, the songwriting thing has been Mark's improvising the solos each night. That's his thing that he's really, you know, geared towards. What I really like is the construction of the songs themselves. Mm. That's what I get.
It's like fishing or hunting. You know, you're chasing it down, and you get in the boat, or you don't get in the boat.
I personally adore the fight over it. I mean, I think it's worth the struggle, because you get strong things out of it. But there is, like Pierre was asking, we there is some friction, but it's worth it.
Yeah.
To me, to have it. I'd rather have that. I've got friends in bands where everybody agrees with everything all the time, and they're huggy, and, oh, that hat is so great. Yeah. And it's a great idea, and the stuff is as exciting as milk, man. Yeah. And I can't listen to it. You know, yeah. It's worth fighting
good
over.
Stuff can come
we
out
will
attention.
Talk about stuff even the following week on the phone for hours about a little section of music till we come to an agreement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's painstaking, but in the end, it's excellent because we're all kind of happy mm-hmm. with it.
Kind of.
We put the pain in painstaking, for sure.
Okay, we got Dan in Albany Park. Dan, how are you? Thanks for listening tonight.
Thanks a lot. Guys, it's a privilege. A big fan for a long time. I've seen you live since 98. Got to give props to my cousin Matt from Oak Park, who's listening. He turned me on to you guys. It was one of the best shows I've ever seen. It was the first time I saw you. Yeah, my mom texted me and said you were on tonight, so I had to ask. you guys did some great sets on the North Side, late 90s, early aughts, Tipsy Tuesday, your acoustic set, and I know you're performing at the club on the South Side. I didn't know if you thought about revisiting the North Side, doing some weekday acoustic sets up there anymore. And one more question about Tipsy Tuesdays. You're so good at the stump the bands. Just didn't know if you could talk about how you caught on to so many classic rock shout outs and you could pick it up. Just because it's very hard to stump you guys.
Right on, man.
Okay. Thanks, Matt, for turning you on to that.
I think, you know, to answer the last question first, the stump the band is really fun for us because it's really walking on thin ice, you know, and somebody yells like, you know, whatever, yell out some song.
Bon Jovi
like,
song.
Yeah, Bon Jovi, you know, I'm a cowboy. We're like, one of us will be like, I think it's in this key. And we'll just sort of find it because you get to a point as a musician that your ears have evolved that you can hear it and you can find it on your instrument pretty well. But then the danger is you get to a song, you're like, you chug it along, you're like, okay, I think we got this, you know, and I'm singing the words as I recall them, you know, sometimes phonetical gibberish, but whatever, it's getting across. And then you get to the bridge, you're like, oh, I forgot there's this wacky bridge in this song. You're like, oh, no. Yeah.
Comes a train
and sometimes
wreck.
We train wreck, yeah. And then, you know.
My wife would often shout out things like Beat It to try to stump you with that kind of stuff. She's a big fan, too. I forgot
we would get Beat It. We would get that.
Yeah. Maybe.
We wouldn't get Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, but we have done that with rehearsal.
Have you really? Yeah.
The North Side, we've loved. I mean, we'll always take a show anywhere. It's just that Reggie's has been so good. We've been there for 10 years every Tuesday, and we continue to be there. So, you know,
we used
that's
to
really
do
our
Wise Fools Pub for about 10 years.
Did you really?
Prior to that. Every Tuesday, and they changed owners.
Yeah.
So we ended up, the people at Reggie's are great, took us in.
Yeah.
And I think they said, you guys want to do a month or two? We said, sure. We tried it after like 4 gigs. Like, you want to do like 4 months? And by the end of the conversation, it's like, how about you guys just come every Tuesday?
Well, it was like March. We started. And then we said, well, why don't you do the whole summer? We said, okay, we'll do the whole summer. Right. And then September came, like, we looked at each other like, yeah. And just did it. We've been there for 10 years now. It's fantastic.
Time flies.
What other gigs you got coming up? Anything else you want to plug?
Hotel.
We have our hotel event, which is we do two a year. But this one's coming up February 15 and 16.
It's called Hotel Blotto.
Hotel Blotto. It's in LaPorte, Indiana, which is an hour and a half from here.
Uh-huh.
And the entire hotel sells out. And we have it's an indoor musical festival. So we'll have bands playing in the atrium, in the bar that's in the hotel. And then we play in the ballroom both nights. So there'll be like 5 bands a day.
The last band ends at what time, Mike?
4 a.m. Yeah. The last set is 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. each morning in the atrium. So, and it's a great, and the nice thing is everybody can do whatever they want to do all day. And
what do you mean by that, Mike?
It's like sleep, Paul. No, but as per your previous cannabis conversation, that type of thing. No, but people can do whatever they want. But all you have to do is not faint in the elevator, and you're fine.
Yeah,
there's
make
no
it
driving.
To your room.
There's no, you know,
yeah, right.
So it's a really nice, safe thing. It's like a summer outdoor camping musical festival, but it's all in this great big bubble. Yeah.
So
it's really fun.
During the day, people are walking around with their dogs and their coolers and all the food.
Hanging in the hot tub.
Cocktails they mixed in their room, and it's like a promenade. They're walking around. And
the fans organized a potluck every Saturday, too, and the people are telling us, hey, thank you for doing this. Like, we didn't do it. I'm not sure who does it.
It's kind of like it has its own organic movement.
So you take over a hotel?
Yeah. The entire hotel sells out.
Wow.
And the one next to it's starting to sell out now, too, so it's good.
And how can people find out more about that?
Well, MrBlotto.net. MrBlotto.net.
We got about 2 minutes left. I want to ask you, I know your history, and I love to talk about the Cardinal Club, but the quote, air quotes, bar band thing, but what is that meant for, you know, just working and cutting your chops over and over and over again with an intimate audience and just playing night in and night out, all these sets?
Well, it develops your ear, like I talked about earlier. That's what develops your ear, and... You know, they always say you can tell a band that's played 1,000 shows together. Yeah. They just move like a clock together. They turn a corner together. And we've played 3,000, 4,000 shows together now. We're going on 4,000 shows now.
Isn't that something?
So that, you know, paying your dues is great. And, you know, we've been in the trenches for 28 years. And we love it down here. You know what I mean? We love the trench. We love the mud. Yeah. We love doing 150 shows a year. You know? It's like, it's invigorating. We don't need to be... You know, at Woodstock, we don't need to be on TV.
Well, we do love the open outdoors and the big stage.
No.
We like the trenches.
To play.
We put on our own outdoor fest in the summer, too, and in the fall. The Autumnal Equinox Fest. So we would kind of look at all the experiences that we want to do, and we just organize them ourselves. It's more fun that way.
You guys have such a good attitude.
Hey, it's really, really nice. We get to do whatever we want to do.
We're lying through our teeth.
Yeah. I always say we won the vocational lotto.
Yeah.
It's like, you shall be a plumber, and you shall be a politician, and you shall be musicians. We're like, thank you.
We're very lucky, for sure.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you all for coming down, Paul, Mike Bolger, and Mike Hay, right?
Mark Hay.
Mark, yeah, right. I've got that. And thanks, Brooke, for hanging around. Thanks, Mark. Where'd Mark go? Okay. Thanks to our studio audience, Mike Morosky. Thanks for Ernie on the engineering. Thanks, Dan Long, for all the production help. And thanks for listening to the show tonight. And we'll see you soon on WGN.